From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us as we move on to alleged spring. We've had a few warm days, but it's been kind of a cold and blustery spring. And those folks living up in the mountains, you're still getting snow. So welcome to you. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're glad to welcome in Jane Lee, God's Heart and Hands Ministry. Jane, good to see you.
It is truly a time to rejoice, isn't it?
It is. You know, we're basketball, March Madness, and all that during March. Well, Easter was March 31st. Mm-hmm. And so I started saying we should start calling it, at least when Easter is in March, which it's not rare, but it doesn't happen all the time.
Right.
We should call it March Gladness.
I like that. That's good. Yes, yes. And all the different ways. Our faith is so rich, isn't it? You never run out of things to learn and to experience. And I think you're onto something. God could use a little more. Always use a new marketing campaign.
Yeah, we need marketing. Yeah. Copyright it and trend everything.
You never know which way, someone that's wayward, you turn them back towards gladness, the Lord. Wow, I'm going to look at my basketball differently.
Yeah. I always have to root for all those. It's the only, you know, big time college football. There's only two Catholic schools, Notre Dame and Boston College.
Mm-hmm.
Although a number of Catholic schools do play college football, but at a much lower realm, I guess, and division. But in college basketball, everybody and their brother has a team, mm-hmm. and they're playing at the top level: Gonzaga, mm-hmm. USF, St. Mary's, Santa Clara. University of Portland, University of San Diego, Loyola. I mean, right here on the coast.
Wow.
There's all kinds of and some of them are, you know, they're in March Madness, and
March Gladness would really take off.
Yeah, remember Sister Jean at Loyola of Chicago, and mm-hmm. she'd be sitting there on the bench with her rosary, and she became a national celebrity, Sister Jean.
I think we're on to something.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm seeing the future of posters, new posters, and you just never know. The up-and-coming high schoolers, you know, it's just – and that's what we do as parents, and the purpose of God's Heart and Hands work is that parents are the link between God and their children. So with so much changing, with every generation faces new things that come into a family and into parenting, we're always looking for other ways to respond to what our children encounter. So – sports heroes, things like that. I could see it all tying in because when you have a child that's particularly talented in a sport and then they want to play it and that's family time and commitment, how do we still hold on to God in it? There's a lot of virtue to be in it about sportsmanship and everything else that we can tie into the experience of the game, but keeping God in the picture. I think that's another way to do it.
It's interesting because you'll see athletes – some of them that get interviewed after the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that they only interview the winning team. I mean, they just do. That's just the way it works. You know, mm-hmm. you don't grab somebody that just lost and say, hey.
Put a camera in their face.
How do you feel about losing? You know,
but true.
A lot of them now say all glory to God is the first thing they say. They say, like, how did you, make that last second basket? How did you, whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And many of them will say all glory to God. But there are a lot of lessons, though, in watching sports with your kids. Mm-hmm. In some ways, I think sportsmanship has taken a real hit in the big time sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody fouls out and players on the other team wave goodbye or the fans wave goodbye, like, you know, things like that you intercept a pass and you go back to the quarterback and wag your finger at him, you know, kind of stuff. You see that a lot. And I use those opportunities to talk to the kids and say that's not what sports should be about. You know, you're both out there. You respect your opponent. You respect the game. You mm-hmm. try your darndest. I mean, they got a score bear. Go ahead and try to win.
Mm-hmm.
But realize that the other person's doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And And you don't need to brag about winning or make them feel worse about losing.
Right.
Imagine when you're in that situation, because you're going to be in that situation.
And you're going to make a mistake, and how would you feel, and so on. And we've esteemed the coach's role almost even or a little above in times to allow that kind of behavior. When parents really, we have that responsibility. It doesn't matter if the coach is
We definitely have that responsibility.
And we're the ones judged, right, by God, and the coach is to a certain degree. But I remember when my son, he was very talented. He developed very early, and he would miss a shot, and he was back down for the rebound. They used to call him Mach for Mach 1 because he could get down there so fast before the ball got there to catch, to play defense. And I used to have to keep him in check going, okay, this is where you're talented right now. Help somebody else. Yeah. What are you going to do? Be a team player. It's not you, and you're not the only one out there. There's no I in team, truly. But we parents are the backdrop for it, and sometimes we have to rein it in because you can get caught in the moment. I get it. Everybody can get caught up in the moment and so on. But that's when you really see that you are God's heart and hands, that you are the link. You know, God's not talking from the burning bush anymore. So he made mom and dad to be the burning bush, so to speak, to hold the boundaries and so on. And sports have so many good things that offer kids.
Oh, they do. It's interesting because my son, the other day we were watching one of the games, and he says, it's interesting that it's become a big story when you help an opponent off the ground. Like,
wow.
Oh, no, I knocked him down. Am I going to help him up? Or he slipped and fell or whatever.
It has. You see that, yes. Yeah. And it's like it's the skies have parted and we're seeing something we didn't know existed.
Yeah.
Right?
And they'll show a replay of that. Look at that. Look at that. Look at that great sportsmanship there. You know, you knocked him down and you helped him up. You know, it's like, wow. Like, that's, you know, and it isn't always that way. Mm-hmm. I've noticed it more. And I remember, and you think that these people aren't role models. Oh, my goodness, they're role models. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember when I was playing Little League, we're going way back. I'm going to mention Roger Maris was the home run king. And he was threatening Babe Ruth's all-time record.
Okay.
And he appeared on national TV, played for the Yankees. He appeared on national TV, and he had a simple piece of, like, gauze around his wrist. Maybe he had a sore wrist or something, but just like sticky tape that you'd buy in the drugstore, you know.
Uh-huh.
One piece around his wrist. And the game was, like, Saturday afternoon. And I had a Little League game that night. At least half the kids at the Little League game had tape around their wrist.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
They noticed that one thing about him because he's the hero, you know, he's doing it. I'm going to do it.
I better do it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we've talked about this before, you know, with marketing and stuff, you know, and now that piece of wrist would have a logo of somebody, of some company on there.
If it didn't have a logo, they'd be taking a Sharpie and drawing it in, which really speaks to understanding that children are looking outside of their parents.
True, they are.
And we've forgotten that we as parents, we are role models for other people's children. And
I've
talked about it.
Well, the parents bought the TV. They turned the TV on. They picked the channel. And the kids are watching it. So this is outside.
That's true.
It's really outside our, I mean, it's within our control what's on the TV and what channel we pick and whether we even have a TV. But once it's there and it's on, it's coming at us.
Right.
We're not controlling whether the guy gets a base hit or he helps somebody up or he's mean or what the character in the sitcom is doing or we're not controlling any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kids do see it as, well, just mom and dad thinks it's okay.
Right, because it's on the TV in my
house.
And
frequently, I mean, I remember growing up and I also remember when my kids were little especially, but even now, when they're college age, having great family moments in front of the TV, you know, like a show that everybody, you know, nowadays you can record and you can, what do they call it, binge and all that stuff. But when I was growing up and even, you know, 20 years ago, if you missed the show, you missed the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just missed it.
Right.
And we would make dates.
Right, family dates.
Oh, the Thursday coach is on or some show. the sitcom that you just love to watch, or maybe, you know,
because
like,
it's a story. All of TV, yeah. It's a story that, and we know that human beings are designed for stories, from folklore to fairy tales to so on, movies
and some of the mysteries. You know, the weekly, you know, usually detective shows that were, mm-hmm. you know, they were like Hawaii Five-0. It was,
yeah.
It was fun to watch those shows mm-hmm. as a family,
mm-hmm.
and those were. Yeah, I think, you know, we really believe, you know, like in dinner together and grace and praying mm-hmm. together and going to church together and doing processions, you know, doing all the mm-hmm. quote unquote really good, you know, visiting loaves and fishes together as a family, that kind of thing. But we also believe in having fun together, because mm-hmm. anything that strengthens a family is ultimately going to be a good thing.
You know, that's a good point. When they said, was it Father Peyton that said a family that prays together plays together?
Mm-hmm.
What strikes me about what you're saying is a family that plays together is strengthened.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that, and we forget that. That gets set aside by busy schedules. It's just that family time and what you're talking about. And we used to do the same thing with basketball. And I won't mention the team because it's rivals of the Sacramento Kings, but we would do it every Sunday and we would make food together.
Yeah.
And it was a family thing because we sure. followed the team for a very long time. And so that what you're talking about is you're building the family story.
Yep.
And so part of what we do in the work through God's Heart and Hands ministry is parents is bringing them back to not only God being back in the center and vetting all decisions about what would God want us to do and praying about it, is that realizing that we're building the children's tapestry with the experiences, and so much is pulling them outside from extracurricular stuff and school and homework, which all necessary, all those pieces. But don't forget the family piece of what you're yeah. talking about. That's the richness.
Yeah, the things right? that strengthen the family ties, including prayer and all of our religious beliefs, but it just having dinner together, mm-hmm. Doing homework together, watching a ball game together, watching a comedy together, going to a movie, going to a play,
right.
all those things that strengthen the family bond. Ultimately, when those kids need something morally,
mm-hmm.
when they need guidance, they're going to turn to their family.
Right.
You know,
right.
they're going to turn to their family because it's the source of their joy. It's the source of their strength.
Mm-hmm.
And they know you're always there. It's not just, oh, well, Dad's fun to watch a ball game with, but I don't listen to him otherwise. No, they do, because you're engaging. I mean, there's kind of this fine line when you're watching TV, especially if it's not a sports, if it's a show,
mm-hmm.
where when do you be quiet and let the show go on,
uh-huh.
and when do you say, oh, that's so cool, they did that, that reminds me of, you know,
right.
you,
yes.
Dad, shh, we're trying to watch the show.
Right, and that is something you can do now because you can pause it, where you couldn't in the past,
yeah.
where you couldn't tape it,
yeah.
and so on. And so that's where we get the interaction, because basically whether it's a show in front of you, that's a story, and they do, like, they want to talk about it, they want to digest it, and that's a crucial part of parenthood, and parents or families are under siege right now. Because the I would say they found, rather, I would offer, that the children, when they're in trouble, so to speak, and the family is, one of the most, it's not really obvious, but contributing factors to it is lack of family dinner. They need that constant, they need everyday connection with us, not quality time versus quantity. No, they need quantity. They need lots of, multiple times during the day, however much time. They need you to look them in the eye, you know, put down the phone. And connect with them and set everything aside. And if they know they have that time with you, they know that you're going to help them sort it out, whether it's a...
And yeah, you know, we hear this about the phone a lot. Mm-hmm. You have to be more interesting than the phone. You have to be more compelling mm-hmm. than the phone. You do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that hard to do. You're
no.
not that much on the phone. So
right.
much so much of
why do they
scrolling
right?
and all that... is boredom. It's,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's, I mean, I remember when I was growing up, well, first we didn't have a TV, and then when we finally had a TV, and everybody went down to Kathy Lewis's house because they had the first
uh-huh.
TV in the neighborhood, you know, kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
but, and watched the Mickey Mouse Club, you
uh-huh.
know,
yes.
but now you have We had, when I was growing up, we had channel, in Sacramento, we had channel 3, we had channel 10, we had channel 13, and then, then we had channel 40. That was it.
That was
completely it. And whatever was on those, and then there were all, you know, 3 was associated with NBC, and 10 was CBS, and 13 was ABC. Now those have flipped, but, and now we've got 400 channels if you have cable of any kind. Or you can have a package that has that many channels, and none of them are very interesting. You know,
that's really true.
It's like, oh, this is a cooking channel. I guess I could watch that.
I guess I could watch. Yeah, right.
You know, like I guess it's just better than sitting here in silence or something. You
interesting
know,
how we've come full circle. Well, yeah. We had 4 channels for children. There was very limited programming, and now with all of those channels that we have now with all the premium cable packages, there's really not that much you're really interested in.
Mm-mm.
It's honestly, that's going to build the tapestry that you enjoy, that you talk about. A lot of it's just, I don't know, find an adjective. But the point is, when parents renew their perspective, that they stand between God and their children, that they are the link between the two, and that the children, God designed their children to look for them, towards them, for everything you're talking about, then the responsibility gives one pause.
Yeah, and then, you know, who knew that one day on Easter Sunday, because of COVID, church would be empty, and we would be watching Mass in the living room on our TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, it was just interesting. And watching, we were watching St. James, and it was Father Ray. He was delivering a homily like the church was packed. And they weren't showing shots of the empty pews. And I thought, boy, how difficult must that have been? And you wouldn't have known. You would not have known.
Wow. Did you ever get a chance to talk to him and ask
him? Oh, yeah. And he said it was, you know, it was different. It was strange. But he knew he had a job to do. It was Easter Sunday, you know.
He did it.
And I remember years ago, I don't remember the year. I should remember the year when John Paul, St. John Paul II, died.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a call from Channel 3 because I was on the radio, you know, on Catholic radio, on, you know, doing the Bishop's Hour. And somebody called me, and his funeral was going to be on live on, like, NBC, which used to carry midnight mass on Christmas Eve and things like that. I don't know if they still do. It was going to be live, but it was going to be, like, 2 a.m. our time. And they called me and said, are you going to be watching the funeral? And I'm saying to myself, I am now. You know,
And the inspiration came through.
Like, okay, I think I better say yes. You know,
yes. And this is God calling. God wants you to do this.
This is we had almost four babies. They were all, you know, had 4
That's
kids.
That's quite a sacrifice.
Yeah, we had 4 kids in 3 years. We had,
maybe because your chances are you were up anyway.
So I'm not positive of the year, but 3, 2, 1, and a newborn.
Wow.
You might be up anyway, like you say. But they said, okay, so you're going to, where are you going to watch it? Well, I'm not going to go to a sports bar at 2 in the morning to watch a funeral. And they said, can we come out to your home? And I'm like, honey.
This is just getting better and better.
Channel 3 is going to be here at 2 in the morning. I think it was Tom Duhane.
Oh, my gosh.
Who was a very religious man. And understood what it was all about. You know, he's just a reporter. He understood what it was all about. And they're going to be in here with cameras and everything at 2. And then I'm like, how do I watch this? Am I going to be generally, kind of small house. We have a dining room, little dining room that merges into the living room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you didn't put a dining room table in there, it'd just be the living room. But this one little section near the backyard has got the dining room table where, you know, about 10 people could sit around it. And generally, if I'm watching something I'm interested in, then there's the couch, and that's usually where the family sits. And then there's one, you know, easy chair or whatever. Generally, I just pull one of the chairs from the dinner table mm-hmm. over, because that's I'm comfortable on it,
right?
And pull it over in front of the TV and watch the TV, uh-huh. you know, and everybody else is on the couch and under a blanket or something, right. you know, snuggling. And that's just the way I watch TV. And I'm thinking, that seems disrespectful, but it seems a little weird if I'm on my knees in the living room in the middle right. of the night for a funeral that's probably going to be 2 or 3 hours long.
Oh, boy.
And I'm going to have a camera on me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very weird experience.
I got to ask. Did you wear your footed jammies?
How do you dress? How do you dress?
Right.
And you want to convey to their audience,
right?
Because they're going to show it on the morning show or something,
right?
You know, they're not going to show that live. They're going to take excerpts mm-hmm. of it, and you want to be reverent, and you want to. I suppose it would have been easier, and it sort of morphed into that where they would ask questions as it went along.
Mm.
Tom would say, "So what's going on here now, and what are your impressions of the kind
also,
of pope he was?"
I think
and,
it would be very moving because he was a very loved.
Oh, he was loved
priest and pope. And so it'd be very moving and challenging to have a camera in front of you with a microphone.
Yeah, and was very popular in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We've had popes that were popular in their own way, mm-hmm. but not too well known in the United States. Pope, mm-hmm. I mean, I think he's the one. I remember he came out and celebrated Mass at Candlestick Park,
mm-hmm.
And I think he did World Youth Day in Denver,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And. I remember Bishop Wiegand telling me during his ad limina visit one time that the Pope asked him about the Heavenly Valley and all the ski resorts because he was a skier.
That's right.
You know, and that he knew that it was in Bishop Wiegand's diocese. But it was just one of those.
So what happened? How did it go?
It proved that God has a sense of humor.
He does.
I think.
He does.
Because he knew my wanting to do the right thing, but not only not to embarrass myself, but do the right thing by the church and by our beliefs, and mm-hmm.
Take seriously what you were indirectly being asked to do.
Yeah, and yet the fact that it was at 2 a.m. in my house in the living
right.
room,
right.
I've never attended a funeral in my own living room.
Because he was asking for one thing, but really it was a much bigger picture to it.
And
put in the context
of
what God was asking.
And you know, I remember when they used to televise Midnight Mass, and it was NBC would do that.
Mm-hmm.
They would have probably almost like a play-by-play announcer
mm-hmm.
who was worked for NBC, and then they would have the color commentator who would explain what's going on. Without really interrupting the service, but really adding
right,
to
a
it
lower
for
voice
yeah, almost like the
bit,
golf tournament voice.
Yes, yes,
you know?
It was helpful to those that
didn't
know.
And this is now the consecration. This is the mm-hmm. you know, and et cetera, explaining it as it went in a reverent tone, mm-hmm. but a very explanatory tone, and it was good even for Catholics that are going, oh, that's what that's called,
mm-hmm.
or this is why we do that.
So how did it go with them coming in at 2 a.m. with cameras?
I'm still here.
How long did they stay?
A couple hours.
They did stay the whole time?
Yeah, a couple hours. And then it was, you know, you guys can stay for breakfast if you want. And I think we only had one diaper-wearing child wander into the scene.
I thought for sure you were going to have the whole team. As soon as one of them realized they'd hear that sound.
You know, all our kids, for some reason, were pretty good sleepers. You know, they didn't have the colicky. Just I mean, they had their moments for sure,
right.
But that some babies, you know, that just are just
really have a harder time.
Really have a hard time, especially
right.
at night. And we didn't have much of that. And I think they all and it wouldn't have disrupted the scene.
No, I think it would have added to the beauty
yeah.
to the beauty
yeah.
of it. It speaks to family life.
Yeah.
And that's interesting that how you talked about he was asking for one thing, but there was a much bigger picture of speaking to the faith and how to do this. That really speaks to parenthood, I think, because it looks like one thing. It looks like we just manage their days. We get them from here to there. We have an idea of what we're trying to do in the bigger picture, but we really don't have an eye for the bigger picture of their lives. And especially being a private math tutor and seeing children have different abilities and understanding that God has something for them to do later, and that parents have to keep an eye on what they're doing, how they're doing, but with an eye towards we don't know where God's going to take them and how they're going to use their skills. And I've found, I can tell you, in doing this for 30 years, and I can't even count how many students, they're either a math science or an English history. I met maybe one that are both. The rest of them are one or the other. And we have to keep in mind that those talents that they've got right now, other talents will surely show up later, but they have to have what they have to have what they need for later. They have to have it now. And we're seeing signs of what they might do. And as parents, we have to support that, guide it, and kind of like flying blind, so to speak. We know the general direction. So kind of like what you were doing in the living room is the bigger picture is God. What was God really calling you to do? How to speak for the faith and for the listening audience at home, you know, and with our children and seeing, when we see ourselves as God's heart and hands, there's a bit of a shock and awe moment. Whoa, yeah. This really is bigger, because the fourth commandment, it's all about parents, right?
Yep.
However, it really comes down to the minutiae, you know, and I've heard it said, and it's really true. It's such an awe-inspiring, powerful, influential, change-the-world kind of job, yet it's done with mind-numbing minutia. And it's actually a benefit, you know, because it helps calm the brain, because you've just got the repetition of the dishes and the food,
yeah,
and running a family day by day. And you do it day by day, and you probably don't remember the last diaper you changed,
yep,
or the last time you picked up a child. We don't realize it, but then all of a sudden we look back and go, wait, where'd it go? Because we just did it moment by moment, but we build this tapestry in their lives that is so monumentally huge. And I would offer that I think that's part of the disruption that's going on, is because it takes a bit until you really are around children and understand that the families are the building block of society, because you form society by forming those children, who they are to be generally. They all make mistakes, like we've talked about. There's pieces, but we form them to be leaders, to be followers, to be antagonistic, to be kind, to be repentant, to be compassionate. We model for them and we show them, as going back to family dinner, going, yep, back to the shows we watch, to talking about the shows and all of these ways. And we don't even understand how their brain is forming all these things. Their brains, and we're just now beginning to understand the brain and be able to look inside of it. They map. Their neurons just map these experiences and make these connections. And we're just talking about a show.
Yeah.
But we don't realize that actually they're taking that in. Or the fact that it's a TV show or a story of a neighbor, or that doesn't matter.
Well, then they're taking it in from birth, and I guess some evidence of even in utero. But they're, because one day they start mouthing words. It wasn't like,
yes,
some kids, they're 3 years old. Some kids are, I don't know, 18 months old or something, mm-hmm, and they say their first word, maybe even younger than that.
Mm-hmm.
And that word was forming ever since they first heard it.
They were listening. They were watching.
Exactly.
Right?
And they didn't just all of a sudden become cognizant and they heard the word mama and went, oh, I could say that. You know,
right,
took them, mm-hmm, and that's why I would always talk to our kids, even before they're old enough to understand what, mm-hmm, I was saying, because
now the scientists know that's hugely,
yeah,
influential in their language center of their brain. We're just doing what God designed us to do. We're just doing what comes naturally, because,
yeah,
they're watching. You see their eyes, even though they're not talking, right? When you were talking to them, they're still watching you.
Well, and we have endless pictures, and I've seen endless pictures, but it really struck me the other day. It wasn't one of our kids. Somebody had sent us a photo, like maybe it was a Christmas card or something, and the baby was 4 or 5 months old. It was in the center of the picture and had that, just those completely yeah. giggling, kind yes. of like not a care in the world, smile, yes. clearly laughing, and you're going, how could a child that young show that much happiness? I mean, not just do we get the happiness, but he's clearly in that moment just as happy as a clam.
You're right.
You know,
that's
a
really
just,
good point.
You know, and
yeah.
you're going, because happiness, we get older, we tend to think of it as a part of a satisfaction, you know, like, okay.
Contingent upon something.
Yeah, I'm happy now because I'm going to have a good dinner and I had a good day at
right.
work and the kids are doing okay in school. And so I'm happy, you know.
Yes, yes.
And we're just that, nobody's happier than when they're laughing.
Right.
Especially yeah. if you get the giggles. With the yeah. uncontrollable. My oldest sister the other day, it was St. Patrick's Day.
Uh-huh.
And so we had more family mm-hmm. and a big family dinner. And she started telling a story, and she got in the middle of it, and she couldn't get that last because every time she got near it,
she started laughing. You
know,
she knew it was coming.
And I'm going, at her age, wow.
Yeah.
She's still getting the giggles. And at that moment, she probably is happy at any point in her life.
Wow. Really beautiful. And that, what comes to mind is what Jesus said, be like a child to
yeah.
enter heaven, right?
Yeah.
Is there not insight in that? Wealth of insight. I mean, it looks so small, but it's really
yeah, be like
telling.
A child, bring the children to me. I mean,
right.
Jesus and the children, it's everywhere.
Right. And children, their happiness is actually based on something different than ours is.
Yeah.
That's a really good point, because they're just innately happy.
Yeah. And
unless
you know,
something makes them unhappy.
Exactly. And, you know, right. I mean, the thing we have to realize, too, is I remember talking to a school teacher one time, not that long ago, and she said she had, like, 34 kids in her class.
Oh, boy.
And she said something like, only about 8 of them are in what I would describe as a traditional family unit, like the mom 25%. And a dad, and you know, yeah, and
a little lower.
And there were a lot of single parent. There were a lot of step, you know, non natural parent in the.
Right.
There were grandmas taking care of the kids. There were aunts. Some were in foster care, and so it's really incumbent on people. As much as we really emphasize that model, the mom and the dad and the marriage and et cetera,
right.
that there are a lot of people in parenting situations, and the kids need the same thing from them.
They do.
The kid didn't pick that situation.
No.
And they need us to help them in their situation.
That's a really good point. And that speaks to how other parents are crucially important in any parenting environment,
yeah.
because it really does take a village, because they need that network, because they're wired to look outside and say, okay, they're not like me, but their family environment may be like me, it may be not. I'm being raised by my aunt, but they're being raised by their grandmother. How's that different? That's just a natural process. But what underneath it all, going back to the happiness, is the love and the consistency and how the people around them are part of their community. Because I think when children have a community, it doesn't. They could have an intact family without a community, or a family that is, as you just described, other living arrangements. But they have a community. The community is pivotal.
Oh yeah.
Because they back up the family. They look at the child and see,
exactly.
you know. And a family, some friends of ours, when they were going through a difficult time, the teenage girl said to me, "It was only one adult outside of my parents of all of our big extended family on one side." That looked me in the eye and said, how are you doing? And she said that changed things for me. Just for someone to look at me as the kid in the situation, it didn't involve me, but involved my family going through a really difficult time. How are you doing, my child? I care about you. I want to hear about your perspective. And so we're called to be God's heart and hands for other people's children as well.
Oh, yeah.
And it's obvious, but so is it's as well obvious talking about family dinner. All these things are being shifted. And we forget that we have, you know, our children, my children are in their 30s, and so they're grown per se. But when I'm around other people and their kids, I have an influence by being there, being a human being. And because our youth today are shifting. They're coming out of the lockdown. They're regaining all of their all the social networks and everything else. So they're very open to it, and they're very aware, and they're really treasuring when someone looks at them and says, "How's school going? How are you doing? How are you handling things?" And so when we take our role as God's heart and hands, clearly, and we do see it as important. But I would say when we're aware of it,
yeah,
then we watch what God will do with us. You know, we watch who God will bring across our path, who we'll see walking down the sidewalk or in church. You know, you cross paths with someone that you haven't seen in a while.
Yep.
And just by being who we are, we can bring God to them, to support them and talk to them and just ask them what went on in their sports game.
Yeah, you know, I remember when my kids would play the Saturday morning city basketball. You know, mm-hmm. I think it started maybe in third grade.
Uh-huh.
And you'd have volunteer coaches. Mm-hmm. And one of my daughters grew up to be one of the volunteer coaches when she was in high school.
Okay.
And had a lot of fun doing it. But I think it started maybe third grade. It'd be pretty much by grade.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in the younger, it was even boys and girls playing in the same on the same team. But at some point they separate them. But I think my son was playing in the third grade team, and there's three or four courts in the one gym. You know, there's smaller courts, and they it was all good stuff. But and hardly anybody could make a basket and et cetera. But when there would be a break, whether it was timeout or halftime or whatever it was, this one little kid would not on any of the teams. He would grab the ball and he'd go out and he'd start shooting and shooting and shooting. And I remember saying to my son, "So who's that kid? He comes to all the games every Saturday," because this would go on 8-10 weeks, you know, during the winter. And he comes out every Saturday. "Oh, that's Kyle. Well, how come he's not one of the teams?" And, "Oh, he lives in a group home." And I said, who brings him here? "Oh, he just gets on his bike." He's probably 9 or 10 years old, you know.
Okay.
So he gets on his bike and comes over there. And because he was a classmate of my son.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "It looks like he just loves basketball." "Oh, yeah, it looks like it." And because he would, any time between games, he'd be,
right,
because there were 4 or 5 basketballs around, he'd just pick up the basketball and shoot. And you know, we finally figured out a way to get him on one of the teams.
Great.
But it was sort of like he was on the outside looking in. He didn't know how to make the connection to be on a team. And so he would go to watch his friends play, but you could tell he really wanted to play basketball too.
Yeah.
You know, and it's those are the moments you have to kind of notice.
Mm-hmm.
And I know with youth sports, sometimes, you know, the parents who are living through their kid, you know, they Little League has always had that reputation of the parents are on the umpires and they're, you know.
They've got signs up now.
Vicariously living through.
Don't harass the refs. Right.
And we had nothing but good experiences, whether it was youth basketball or Little League. We didn't have a great experience with soccer because our kids just didn't take to it. It wasn't anything to do with the coaching. They just weren't very good at it. And so they maybe played a year and then found another, you know, another Saturday morning activity. But we had nothing but good coaches who realized that this probably none of these kids were going to be in the NBA.
Kept it in perspective. And
yeah.
How beautiful. It almost sounds like a story of the Holy Spirit, that God brought this little boy to your attention, and then and your son knew him, and you were able to work it around, you know, to get him on a team. And that's another facet of when we see ourselves as God's heart and hands. We don't have to have our own children in order to see where we can affect children's lives, right? And we all know people, I'm assuming we do, because I do, and I think, you know, it's kind of obvious.
I think we all do.
Yeah, that when we, and you see them, they affect the lives of children wherever they can. And now that my children are grown, I'm looking at, they're starting another youth group, a new youth group at St. John the Evangelist in Carmichael. And I was talking to the coordinator because the kids are showing up and they're even showing up alone. They're trying to get this social network going, which really speaks to how they're trying to improve the social network and recover from the lockdown and having those connections. These kids are taking it and taking advantage of the opportunity. And I mentioned to her, you know, Friday nights are hard on teenagers if they don't have anything to do. You know, if you guys get a program going where the basketball courts are open, I'll volunteer to be there to hang out with the kids because they need a place to put their energy. They need somebody that knows their name, you know, to build community and to recover that, so to speak. And that really goes back to letting God use you. When our own parenting responsibilities are subsiding, is letting God use us and seeing ourselves as, I still see myself as God's heart and hands when it comes to children and whatever comes across my path and wherever it is in any environment.
Yeah, you know, there are opportunities that it's necessary for people to say, I'll volunteer to make something happen. One thing that frustrates me is you go by the high school football stadium, and it's a beautiful track. It's an all-weather track, and it's a grass infield. And you think, oh, it'd be fun to go run around that track. Always padlocked.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Try it. Try it sometime. And a gym.
Right, they just don't have access.
The doors are locked. And, I mean, we're talking about public facilities. Right. And usually the excuse when you talk to the school board or you talk to the principals or you talk is liability. We know we can't just open the gym up and let people in there. But if you got 10 or 12 or 15 or 20 parents and said, Saturday at noon, I'll be there, and maybe you want two people there or four people there, and you sign up just like you do for adoration. I'll be there. I'll cover those 2 hours. Mm-hmm. But we need to open the gym, and we need to open the track so kids can, not just kids, adults can go.
So the community can use the resources to come together to increase the tightness, build the fibers again. We're still recovering from the gap that was made. And those children, that social development, we have to actually make overt steps to help them.
Yeah, I mean, so much connect. Of sports now, and I think it's true in a lot of other things too, extracurriculars, if you will. You're either on a team or you're not on a team. Mm-hmm. If you're not on a team, you don't. I don't.
And it's highly competitive.
Yeah,
which is very narrow.
I remember from my own childhood, going out to shoot baskets with my friends, going out and playing baseball in the street or at the park. You know, we didn't have to have a uniform with a sponsor and a coach and all that stuff.
Just overhead.
You know, going out in the front yard and playing catch with a football. You know. Mm-hmm. That you could organize your own games, and you don't see that much anymore. You see it all, you know, whether it's soccer, whether it's basketball, whether it's baseball.
That's a good point.
You've got to be on a team, you know, and some kids that doesn't work for. Just they can't keep the schedule. Well, we practice on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 4 to 6, and our games are in these nights and that kind of thing. But just and there are so many wonderful facilities around that really somebody just needs a key, and I understand you need supervision and you need but here's a track. Come run around the track.
You know, you bring up a really good point, and I wonder where the Lord will take it. Who's listening that will be like, I could do that. I could get some other parents together. I could, kind of like what I was saying for the youth group at church. I volunteered and brought up the idea because I know they do it in really difficult communities where the teens are really struggling when there's higher crime and, you know, basically the kids just need something to do. They'll keep the basketball courts open in the gyms till midnight.
That's great.
And put the adults in there. And that just builds community. And the kids just need things to do. And so, and you know, as soon as you have the idea, they want you to be involved, which I'm more than happy to because I think it's pivotal for these kids because – the cell phones, they like you said, the TV, it brings in other things. And so if they've got nothing else to do, like we're talking about watching cable, they're bored. Okay, but if they can go hang out and play basketball, and then I'm trying to think of other things about the kids, because not everybody plays basketball.
Right.
And our priest, St. Dominic, could be a saint one day, Father Dominic, he's getting a foosball table and a ping pong table.
Yeah.
Because the kids need, and they're hungry for it. They really are, because they're that's how God made them. And so when we see ourselves as God's heart and hands, it's like there's a gap. God's brought that to my attention. So what does he want me to do? I'm going to step into the gap and we'll see what happens. You know, we had part of our street had a hill on it, and there were two boys that were getting a reputation for getting in trouble. And I think they just didn't have enough to do. And the neighbors were starting to rumble about it. And these boys got refrigerator boxes and put them on their skateboards. And they laid on the skateboards and they cut the hole out and they would zip down this hill at a high speed. Very dangerous, because they weren't watching for cars. It was just the two of them, and they each had their own little contraption on the skateboard, and they're zipping down, and the other parents are starting to rumble. So I go out there and I start talking to them. So tell me what you did here. Oh my gosh, what a design. How'd you guys come up with this? And just chatted them up, and their whole demeanor just completely changed, because an adult got into their world and just talked to them, saw them as a human being. And then because of that, I was able to talk to them about how cars won't see them coming around the corner. They never thought of that, you know? But it was a choice in the moment. The Lord brings us, like when you talk about seeing things in children, the Lord brought it to your attention, that little boy Kyle. I would offer that he does. He'll direct us towards it. And if we acknowledge that we can be God's heart and hands, oh, Lord, is this something you want me to do? Or is this just an idea? What else do you want me to do? Because when we participate in the prayerful process of being human, really, and being an adult and being a parent, we change things. And we can't change the world, but we can change the part of the world God's given us.
Yeah, I mean, do the little things.
Yes.
I mean, how many saints have said, some have famously said it, and others have just done it. None of them, it doesn't seem, we're out to change the world, at least not all in one fell swoop.
Right.
You know, you just do it one human being at a time.
Mm-hmm.
If you can change the world around you, you know, my dad used to say it, and he didn't come up with it, but bloom where you're planted,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I've always, I love the sense of a bloom, number one,
uh-huh.
but bloom where you're planted, because he was a botanist, you know, but
oh,
that
okay.
really makes a lot of sense. You don't have to be mayor of New York City or
mm-hmm.
or a U.S. senator or a five-star oh. general or whatever. You can bloom where you're planted by talking to your neighbor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that thinking about going back to that classroom where you were talking about the teacher saying, what is it? Only eight were coming, what we would call intact homes. So the majority are not.
The term she was like traditional 1950s Ozzie
right.
and Harriet family,
yes.
you know.
Yes. And going back and putting that with a blooming where you're planted, I've heard it said that the best gardens have the most fertilizer.
Hmm.
So those children and those unpredictable, uncertain, maybe possibly difficult, because even intact families can have very difficult situations.
Oh, sure.
But if we see those difficulties as fertilizer to bloom, we shift the perspective.
Yep.
And then we see that you know, God will bring people into our lives that are going to help us through it. But if we just have the awareness, then that changes how we go about our day. How many times do we change a checker's life? What do we call them? Cashier in a grocery store, just by looking them in the eye and talking to them, you know, asking them. I love when the line.
Usually, it was the other where I was growing up, it was the other way around. They were changing my life. We had one. Diane was her name, with two N's, and
uh-huh.
she made sure we knew that. She knew everything about you. She just did. She'd been at the same grocery store, and there was only like one grocery store in town.
Mm-hmm.
She'd just been there forever. And it was kind of like the town barber shop, you know,
right.
where the barber already.
So she carried people's stories.
Yeah. And
wow.
she was as much a role model as, you know, Bobby, how's your brother doing? You know, or, you know.
Yeah.
It was. And then when I had kids, she she knew, you know, she's,
my gosh. Yeah. Wow. Wow. That's amazing.
She was, the most influential person in my town that I've ever known, and 3,000 people showed up to his funeral. They had to have it outdoors. Was a guy who passed out towels in the gym at UC Davis.
Really?
He had more influence on people than anybody because he was a decent human being that cared.
Wow.
You know, everybody loved him.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, you think, wow, that's interesting, isn't it? You know,
3,000 people.
In a small town,
yeah,
in a very small town, and it's just like, how can that be? I mean, he was a celebrity, in a good sense of the word.
Yes,
everybody in town knew who he was. Everybody on the campus knew who he was, and he just had this demeanor to him, and everybody knew he cared about them.
Wow,
and. He was more famous than the mayor or anybody.
Oh my gosh! So he did you ever get to know him personally?
I knew him well. Yeah, I was one of those guys getting the towel.
Oh, got it. And see, we can do that as parents. We can do that as parents. When my kids were teenagers, I always stayed up when they got home with their friends and so on. And even on my way to bed, when I heard that key in the door, I would turn right around and I even threw flour on the counter to make it look like I'd been up, and I was already making things, but I would always talk to the kids and ask them and just to be there with them. And they would come hang out with me. And my son used to get so frustrated. He goes, they come to see you, not to see me. And because I was just spending the time just making myself available for what he was doing, just the human thing. And I think we need, it sounds obvious, but really it's not. As parents, do that. Be the house that the kids can come to.
Oh, yeah.
Stay up when they get home. Ask them about their day, invite the other ones over, cook for them, so on, so forth. It will make the world of difference. In fact, one of them was telling me he hadn't told his parents yet, but he didn't go to his first semester of college. He messed up on paying the fees. So he was living at home, going to the junior college, and he was still leaving and going to class as if he was still in school, even though he was going nowhere. And when the second semester came, then he would have everything in line, and then he wouldn't goof up. And I said, what are you going to do when you don't get a report card? He goes, well, I'll already have started the second semester, so then they probably won't be quite as angry at me. And I said, I bet they're going to really be okay if you tell them, you know, just let them know you made an honest mistake. People make mistakes. They're going to be your support system, I'm betting. And I encouraged him to. And then sometime later, he came back and he said, well, you're right. They didn't kick me out. Weren't pleased, but they understood that mistakes happen. Then they told me some stories about how they've made similar mistakes.
Well, it's hard, too. I mean, kids, you know, maybe they're not doing good in school.
Mm-hmm.
And how's school going? Oh, I'm doing fine. How'd you do on that last test? Oh, I did good. You know, and mm-hmm. Sometimes you pick up on cues and sometimes you don't. Sometimes you don't want to, I guess.
Right.
You know, and you don't want to really pin them down and say, are you sure you're doing okay? You know, and teachers have full plates. They really do, you know, and it's hard for them. It's one of the things that, you know, and I'll never get into comparisons. I mean, we're rooting for everybody. You know, the public schools and the Catholic schools. But the Catholic schools, really, they really do have, they feel that need to keep the parents really updated on how Billy or Sally's doing.
Right.
You know, whether it's grade-wise or behavior-wise or mm-hmm. or anything, you know, that they see that as part of the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of public teachers do, too. Public school teachers do. But some mm-hmm. of them are just overwhelmed with...
Right.
Just trying to teach
my,
the class.
My brother's a public school teacher and a coach, and he would make phone calls home to parents.
Yeah,
you know, to even if the kid was really a challenge, and there's some that were. He always found something positive to say about the student, but that was then he could talk about, you know, what he was wanting to let the parent know, so the parent could support the child.
Yeah,
you know, and so he always went to that kid, went the extra mile for the kids. And we have that ability. We influence them so much. I think we've been distracted from the influence we can have in a child's life and what we're called to do. And so as parents, I mean, it's a commandment, right? It bridges after the first three before the bottom six. It's the one that stands in the middle when God's going to talk about our behavior, what we should and should not do. Parents are in the middle.
And you're a math person.
Yes.
There's 10 commandments. There is no middle to 10.
That's the English side of my brain going, you know, in the middle being it's bookended by the two.
You need 11 to have a middle.
Thank you. Yes, yes. So we say we parents stand in the breach, no matter how small it is or how skinny it is.
Isn't it interesting that that's one, I mean, there's 100 things that Jesus told us to do or recommended that we do, suggested that we do, commanded that we do.
Yes.
But those 10 commandments from God himself, there it is, number 4. Right. I'm not right ranking them in order. Do them all. Just do them all. Don't say, well, I did 1 through 8 and so 9 and 10, you know, 80%. That's
who was
a B.
It that said they're not in sand? They're cast in stone. Yeah they're in stone.
And but just the fact that it's one of the 10, you know.
And it because it's honor thy father and mother, it speaks to how we are called and expected by God to treat our parents.
To be honorable.
Yes. To be
as
the
parents,
to be honorable. Right. Right. And we have a huge responsibility. It is we can change, we can sway a kid, we can be encouraging, we can be discouraging. And so that's why as seeing ourselves as God's heart and hands, we change the world by how we raise our children. It's really what it comes down to.
Amen. Jane, always a joy. Thanks so much.
It's good to be here.
That's going to do it. Well, you're always welcome here. That's going to do it for us for today. God bless everyone. We'll talk to you again soon. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
We stand and lift up our hands, for the joy of the Lord is our strength. We bow down.